Okay, we are live.
Okay.
You have to push
right now. I've got a spinning little box.
Let me know when you're in. Let me tell them. You can bring us in.
Okay. Let's see here. Let's go ahead and go live. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the very first edition of whatever this is that we're doing. I am Robbie West, your favorite right-wing conservative wingnut. And over there is Ted Rall, a political cartoonist and reporter and just all-around good guy. And I'm glad to call him a friend, even if he's wrong.
Likewise, Robbie. I feel the same way about you. Not that you're a left-wing reporter, but yes. All the other stuff, all the good stuff. So Robbie, this was your idea. So, so basically we're on Rumble exclusively here, so we can talk about anything we want. We decided we were going to use this space to hash out some of the harsher, more controversial divides that you and I have had, both on Deprogram with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou and the TMI show, and to some extent on DMZ America with Scott Stantis. So obviously you and I come from completely opposite points of view in many respects, although we do agree on a surprising amount.
But we agree on a lot.
We come here not to agree. We come here to throw down. I hope not risk our friendship. That would be bad. It takes a lot to piss me off, and nobody's ever argued me into pissing them off, being pissed off. So, at least not on my end.
Well, so, if you got any personal attacks, it means that you just can't make an argument at that point.
No, I agree. As soon as someone starts using ad hominem attacks, whether it's on social media or in person, I always start to I get happy because I'm like, they're losing. They know they're losing, or maybe they're not losing, but they can't win. I mean, you know, if that's what they're reduced to.
Yeah, or they don't even know what it is that they're arguing for. That's my personal favorite. That happens a lot.
So today we're going to talk. I mean, I know we're going to have to do immigration at some point. But right now we're doing God versus science. The other day, you and I were talking a little bit toward the end of the TMI show. Yeah. About this exact topic. So, you know, I wanted to, I'm just going to throw out here. So if that's okay with you, Robbie.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So you're a man of faith. You believe please tell me to shut up if I get anything wrong about your religious beliefs, but you're a Christian conservative. You're a fundamentalist Christian. You believe that the Bible is the literal word of is literally true, and it is literally the word of God.
A little caveat there, because the Bible also has a lot of allegory, and so there are some people, for example, Peter Ruckman taught that every word of the Bible was literal. He was a pastor in Pensacola, Florida. He founded what's called Bible Baptist Church, and he has a little Bible college down there. The Bible is a book of poetry, is a book of allegory, and it is a book of facts. It's just, it's all divinely inspired. But I think where people kind of go off the reservation is whenever they think that you think that every word of the Bible is literal, and that's not the case.
All right. Well, that's giving you a little bit of wiggle room here. But and you believe the Earth is 6,000-ish years old?
Yeah, around 6 or 7, somewhere in there.
Okay. So, we'll start with that. What do you mean somewhere around there? There's an exact number, right? I mean, if it's all true, so people have done the math and they've figured out exactly how many years it is. How come it's, I mean, you just don't know the exact number, or are you?
Yeah. I don't know. I believe that the Earth was created in six literal days. That's the time it took for creation. There were no millions of years. There's no gap theory. The Earth is not billions of years old. It was created in 6 literal days, and on the 7th day, God rested.
Robbie, how do you square that with the fact that hundreds of thousands of scientists you know, working separately, presumably not part of any kind of vast conspiracy. You know, they, you know, people like, you know, I think about my dad, right? My dad went to MIT. He's a scientist. He was an aeronautical engineer, and he went to Stanford and Caltech. He was from Oak Park, Illinois. And then he only school he applied. He was told that he was very gifted in math and science. So he applied to MIT, nowhere else. He got in, had a storied career as the project manager of like the F-15 and all sorts of other things. I, on the other hand, his son didn't grow up with him, grew up in Dayton, Ohio, a few hundred miles away, went to Columbia University Engineering School. Yep. My father and I never talked about, you know, like sort of carbon dating really, or, you know, that we didn't get into that kind of stuff. I met lots of people who came from, you know, they're Russian scientists who are from Siberia. They went to some Russian technical institute. The point is, people all over the world from different backgrounds, different races, different ethnicities, different education, different levels of educational attainment, but they all studied STEM, and they all kind of they came to the conclusion that things like carbon dating, dinosaurs, the expansion of the universe, the age of the universe, the how long it's been since, you know, a light that you see in the star in the sky, how long, you know, how old is that light that you're seeing, that, you know, that the star that you're seeing might not even exist anymore by the time the light gets here. All those things, all that scientific stuff that doesn't square with the 6,000 or 7,000 year old Earth and leads you to a 13 billion year old, you know, Earth. How do you, you know, I mean, are they all fucking stupid? Are they working for the devil? Are they part of a conspiracy? Like, what's going on?
None of the above. I think a big part of it is just the human mind is just simply too small to understand. And I've studied these things. I like to read a lot. I believe that, no, God, he.
I wouldn't have this discussion with you, by the way, or this debate with you, if I didn't think you were smart. You wouldn't be worth having it.
Well, no, I appreciate it, because this is not going to be like clubbing a baby seal. So just to kind of give you an idea about where I'm coming from, these are all questions, though, that I had, you know, because growing up, every little boy, you're always fascinated about dinosaurs, and you learn the names like Brachiosaurus. This is a way for a little kid to have some kind of power over these ancient things that used to live that were so much bigger than what we were. And so I had the same questions. And so what I did is I started studying and I started reading specifically books, written by Newton, for example, you know, the father of the law of gravity. And one of the treaties that he came through.
Apple hit him on the head.
Yeah. I mean, just the whole idea of apparent age. Are you familiar with that?
Do tell.
So apparent age is it's a theory that when God created the universe, when he created Earth, when he created man, he did it as in an apparent age, as if you're already an adult. For example, when God created the Garden of Eden, and then he created Adam, Adam wasn't created as a newborn baby. He was a fully grown man. The garden was already there. The animals were grown. That's why he had to name them. The trees and the fruit was already all there. So they were created fully matured. So that's where the idea of apparent age comes from.
Like a magic trick, like conjured up.
Well, he's God. So I mean, he can do whatever he wants.
That follows. Okay.
And so whenever he created the heavens and the earth, and he created creation, he did it in a way as if it was already grown, or it was already fully mature, it was fully developed, it was fully formed.
And that addresses the chicken and the egg question, right?
Yeah. Well, because I can't tell you if Adam had a belly button. I have no idea. Couldn't tell you. No idea. But I can tell you he was a fully grown man when he was created, just like Eve was a fully grown woman when she was created.
Okay. I mean, I don't have a problem with any of that, but go on.
No, but things, can I prove it? No. That's the beautiful thing about faith. Well, I don't have to prove anything.
Well, I mean, you can't
prove it. I just had to make an argument about it.
But I still want to, you know, but what, how do you square the fact that all these people who study science, mm-hmm. Many of whom are quite intelligent, some of whom are not. But really, this is their area of expertise.
Sure.
And they've looked at it and they're like, well, it's very clear based on beyond a reasonable doubt that, for example, we know from mounds of data, right? That like how sure. fast the Earth, the universe is expanding. So therefore we can say roughly how old the universe is.
Now, and that actually reinforces my point. Mm-hmm. Because God is a God of order. When he created the universe, he created it fully formed. And it's so awesome. It's so expanded.
You don't believe in the Big Bang.
Oh, I absolutely do. God spoke and bang, it happened.
Okay. So do you believe that the universe is expanding?
I don't know one way or the other. I have no problem with it though.
Okay. I mean,
I've obviously never studied it.
According to all of our measurements, it is.
Sure. I'm sure it is. I'm just like, one of the things that I think is really kind of cool. Have you ever seen the models about the way that the Milky Way, how the Milky Way is orbiting the supermassive black hole that's in the center of the galaxy. And then our solar system's right there on the end. And just all these, this, the models just showing how all the planets just basically these wickedly fast marbles just flying through space.
Oh yeah. We're going hundreds of thousands of miles per hour.
Yeah. It's insane. And then just trying to figure out how could all of that have possibly happened by accident? Because you have all this matter that coalesces to a single point, a single time, in a single place, but you can't explain to me where the matter comes from, and then it explodes, and then you get all of this, and then you get all of this order, and not just in our galaxy, but the galaxies that we're able to see. That requires a lot more faith than what I need, because I believe that God is a God of order, and He created the heavens, not heaven. He created the heavens, plural, and the earth. He created order. And one of the reasons why we are such a curious people is he wants us to explore. He wants us to ask questions because his creation should point back to him and his glory about what he made. He wants us curious. He's not afraid of those questions.
Is order the right word, Robbie? I mean, I always tripped over it. And I wondered if that was a question of vocabulary. I mean, to me, it's like, okay, well, if the world were well-ordered, it would look more like the metric system, you know, instead of, you know, I don't know if an ordered Earth has like, you know, a day that's, you know, 23.964 hours and mm-hmm. a year that's 365.62 blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, it's not like, to me, it seems like things should fit together more neatly. The Earth wobbles, it's certainly the universe is super intricate and impressive.
Yeah, well, I mean, Neptune's on his side.
But things are running into each other. Things are blowing up. Things are, you know, stars are going supernova. Yeah. Things are moving around, colliding into each other. Galaxies run into each other. Yep. Mayhem ensues. I don't know if order is really the right word as just big and detailed.
I mean, order works for me because the way that I see it, you know, God created the moon. It's just far enough away so that way we have the tides. The Earth spins just the right speed. We're in the Goldilocks zone right now. And one of the promises that God has, that God has given us, is that they will always follow night and that the seasons are always going to follow each other. And so
Robbie, if we come back 5 billion years from now and the sun has turned into a red giant and the Earth is no more, I'm going to call you out on this claim.
No, that's okay, because the Bible teaches that when Jesus returns after the millennial reign, he's actually going to create a new heaven and a new earth. So maybe that's when we will get our metric system universe as opposed to what we have right now. But for right now, though. We've got the one that we have.
Well,
no warts and all, earthquakes and volcanoes and tidal waves and wars and frankly, people who are sadistic.
Right. Well, I mean, certainly, I think the fact that things are wrong is not, I mean, Well, I mean, that's an argument. The argument against God based on that is, as you well know, mm-hmm. it's like God may well be ubiquitous and omnipotent, but he doesn't seem to be very nice or very caring. To quote Al Pacino in The Devil's sure. Advocate, God is an absentee landlord. I don't know that, like, I have to believe in a benevolent God, but God doesn't seem very benevolent.
Let me ask you a question. I know the answer to this. I'm sure that you do. Who created evil?
God
did. The Bible right. says he did.
God created evil. Because otherwise it's free will, right? It's like people have to have a choice. Otherwise, it's like sort of like analogous to my mother. My mother used to praise me for, she was like, "You're such a good son. You don't do drugs and run around in the wee hours of the night with like losers." And I was like, "Mom, that doesn't say anything about my personality, because I don't like drugs. I'm not interested in drugs, and I don't want to hang out with those people because they don't interest me." It would be far more, it would say a lot more about me if I were tempted to do those things and then I refrained from doing them.
Sure. And, one of the things that's really interesting about, whenever I talk to people about God, how you're talking about carbon dating, for example, is the Great Flood. And this is one of the things that I pointed out to my pastor, is just like, people, we have a big misconception, especially here in the West, is that we seem to think that there's an Old Testament God and that there's a New Testament God. And that they're two different.
Like there is, yeah.
It's the same God.
The emphases, the tonal differences between the New and the Old Testament gods are massive. I mean, the Old Testament God demands that a dude, tests him to see if he's willing to sacrifice his own son, kill his own son, I don't see. And then Jesus, on the other hand, is like, "Let he who's without sin cast the first stone." Old Testament's full of vengeance, getting even, Israelites running rampant and killing all their enemies, mm-hmm. which is, of course, the books that the Israelis are quoting these days. And the New Testament is all about redemption and forgiveness. Pretty much it's like there's not even any statement that says if you fuck up, you're gonna burn on the devil's fork in the New Testament.
Yeah, but here's the thing though: everything in the Old Testament points to the New. For example, you kind of referenced to Abraham where he took Isaac up to Mount Moriah to sacrifice him. Do you remember what Isaac said when Abraham took him up there?
He was pretty much like, "Dad, don't."
No, he wasn't. He said he's just like a father. We don't have a lamb. And Abraham said, "Our God will provide one," because Abraham knew that Isaac was a child of promise. And what I'm about to unpack for you is one of the biggest things, one of the biggest reasons why I'm not a Zionist. It goes all the way back to the person of Abraham himself. And what it means to be chosen by God, a chosen person, has nothing to do with ethnicity, has nothing to do with race. It has to do with belief and faith. Abraham, when he took his son up there, because you got to remember, God promised Abraham, "I'm going to make of you a great nation whose numbers are going to be more than the sands of the sea and the stars of the sky." Abraham knew, he did not understand how, but he knew that God was going to provide a sacrifice that was not going to be his son. That's why he said it.
I mean, did he? I've always read it as a test. Like, you say you're so into me, mm-hmm. you really say you believe in me. Well, then fucking do this really horrible thing for me.
But here's the picture.
Okay, God, I'll do it.
But here's the picture. Abraham, when he goes there, he puts Isaac on the altar. He raises up that knife to plunge into his chest. The angel appears and says, "No." And then you got the ram there in the brush. They sacrificed the ram. Jesus was that sacrifice that happened 3,000 years later, because what God did in allowing people to sacrifice his son was what he stopped Abraham from doing. It's a picture of that.
Well,
Just let me say this real quick.
I agree that there's like lots of callbacks, right? Like in the same way that Star Trek Next Generation calls back to the original series, there's a lot of callbacks to the Old Testament, and there's stuff that you can argue is.
That's the whole point, because you got to remember, in the Old Testament, the Bible talks about this in the Hebrew specifically. When you're living in the Old Testament, you're looking forward through a dark glass. You don't know. All you have are the promises that you have. We have the hindsight of looking backwards. So for us, it's very easy. So but you're kind of growing up.
Easy to say. I mean, you know, as an atheist, I look at that and I say, okay, well, the men who wrote the scriptures, who wrote the gospel. They were rabbis, they were Jewish, they were Jews, they read what is now the Old Testament. So they referenced it and said, oh, like this is like this thing you already knew. You liked Terminator. Here's some stuff in Terminator 2 repeats a lot of the same plot points.
Except if you're going through the Old Testament, it's all about the Jews screwing up and then getting punished, ultimately getting destroyed by it. So if you're going to write your own story, where your own kind of a national myth, like say for example the Babylonians, you know, that's where the whole idea of Tiamat comes from, their dragon sky god. Compare those writings. Or the Persian writings of Zoroaster or whatever, to what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches, if you do this, you're going to be punished. And the whole reason why Israel was even established, because you got to remember, the person of Israel, he was born from Jacob, or he was born from Isaac. His name was Jacob, and then he changed his name after he wrestled with God. And got his hip broke for his trouble, mind you, while he was doing it.
He got off easy.
Yeah, I mean, well, he was a trickster. And so, where am I going with all of this? Where modern day Judaism splits off from is that they try to say that in order to be one of the chosen people of God, you've got to be a direct descendant of Abraham. First of all, you can't prove that. No one can prove that. So much time has passed. Second,
I think you could actually. Abraham is supposedly buried in what is modern day Turkmenistan, near the ruins of the Silk Road city of Merv. I've been to the alleged grave, although it doesn't really make a lot of sense because that's a long way from the Holy Ground, from the Holy Land.
But and so much time has passed. No. Also, Islam, they revere Abraham as one of their progenitors too. So, I mean, the Bible says that he was buried in Rachel. He was buried in Levant,
Sarah's tomb. It's a lot more recent, but we know that people are descended directly from Genghis Khan, for example.
That makes sense. I mean, the guy was a warlord and a mass rapist, and frankly, a lunatic. So no one's making that argument
or not, but that's a discussion for another time.
I mean, no one's making that argument about Abraham though. The guy was a shepherd. He came from Ur. So I mean,
a guy is willing to kill his own son for a god,
but he knew he wouldn't have to. Remember, read what he said.
If he knew he didn't have to, then it's kind of like he's got his finger crossed behind his back, like I'm just gonna. It's all just for fun. I know God's got me covered.
That's because he wanted to see what kind of miracle God was going to do. When he said, "Don't worry about that,"
and think that God's testing Abraham, right?
Of course, he is. God tests all of us.
It's not a test. It's not really a test if Abraham knows it's a test.
We're always tested, and then here's the thing, right? I mean, when it comes to free will, you and me, we grew up pretty similar. I'm more religious than you are because of choices that we made. I mean, every choice that you make in life, you can make decision A, B, C, or D. Mm-hmm. God knows what's going to happen regardless of what choices that you make.
So do you believe in predestination?
I mean, to an extent. I mean, like, for example, I know that if someone doesn't accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, they'll die in their sins and they're going to go to hell.
That's not really predestination, though. Predestination is sort of like God already knows, for example, if
the end from the beginning.
You, me, and John are all going to be able to do deprogram or not, knows whether something will come up, whether we'll be sick, whether a tree will fall on my house or whatever.
Yep.
Or like a choice. Let's say God already knows whether, you know, I'm going to decide to go out for dinner tonight or stay in. And do I want to go in or do I want to stay in or do I want to go out? But yep. Like, it's not really a choice because under predestination, God already decided what I'm going to decide.
He didn't decide anything. God doesn't control you. He doesn't control anyone.
Okay, so there's no predestination.
So we are free to make whatever choices that we make. He knows what the end result is going to be, whatever choices that we make. But he's not going to force us to make one over the other.
But if he already knows mm-hmm. what the outcome is going to be, let's say, yep. you know, like in my dinner example.
Sure.
Then I don't really have free will if he already, or you're just saying he knows the results of my free will.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like if you go to dinner tonight and if you go to a restaurant and if you want to get steak or you want to go get Thai food or whatever else, he already knows what the end result's going to be, whether you get explosive diarrhea or not, depending on the order it is that you make.
Right.
You can make whatever choices.
You already know what I'm going to order, what's going to happen, whether I'm going to get explosive diarrhea or, you know, he's going to know the whole thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it just matters which.
That's a lot of a name to know about 8 billion people on the planet.
He's got a lot of bandwidth. And also keep in mind, he's known everyone about everyone that's ever lived or ever will live. And one of the reasons why, for example, that I'm against abortion is in the book of Psalms, King David, through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, said, "You knew me before I was formed in my mom's belly. You knew me as a person. You knew who I am before I was even, while I was inside my mama. You know who I am, and I worship you, and I praise you."
Look, you and I are both on the same page about, like, you know, human beings are. I mean, I believe in it's science. Life begins at conception. It just
100%.
But
the difference is, though, is personhood. I mean, no, like, for example,
let me tell you a cool story before I forget it, Robbie. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So when I had my son, I only have one kid. I kind of viewed him like a bit of a science experiment.
Right.
And so one thing that when he first started talking, he was, his first word was daddy, by the way, very proud of that fact. It's better than a Pulitzer. I asked him, he was about 1 year old. And I asked him, like, do you remember being inside mommy's tummy? And he said, and he talked to me about it. He said, yeah, he told me that he did. And then I was like, so, you know, and he said, I already knew you before I was born because I could hear your voice. But then this is the part, I said, what was it like? And he said, it was hot and it was really, really loud. I said, what was it loud like? He said, it sounded like when the pipes got clogged. And I'm like, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So kind of cool. But then
for sure.
Thing when he was 4 or 5. He'd completely forgotten.
Yeah. I mean, we remember a lot whenever we're little. You know, probably my earliest memory, I was probably around 2 years old. I was at my grandmother's house, and they had these metal peacocks hanging up there on the walls. I remember my papaw picked me up, and he was talking to me. And I remember thinking, why is he picking me up? I don't understand this. I don't want to be held. I remember thinking
down.
I'm almost 50 years old, I still remember that.
You draw your strength from the earth.
Just put me down. Well, I want to go back out and go play in the yard.
Like when I pick up the cat, he really doesn't like it, but he tolerates me because he knows it's like my way. But Robbie, let's get back to the science part because that's the topic here, right? So, I mean, how do you explain the fact that there are so many clear indications from all the measurements that we've developed, all mm-hmm. the tools we've developed, all the ways that we have of understanding the earth, which, by the way, all come from God, right? Our brain is designed by God. Our, you know, I'm just going with what you're saying. So it's not like we're, you know, being misled by the devil here. Nope. Okay, so we measure it and we're like, okay, the earth is 13.7 billion years old, or is it the, I think it's the universe is 13.7
but billion. we're getting a lot of that though from carbon dating and stuff like that, right?
Well,
that's where a lot of the data comes from.
Oh, well, for the age of the universe, I think it's from the rate of expansion is starting to slow. So if you can extrapolate like the distance, average distance between stars and planets and galaxies and so on, then you can sort of figure out how far it's going to go until it stops expanding from the Big Bang, and then it's going to start to contract. And by the way, the part that always blows my mind is no one knows what's not in the universe, right? Yeah. Like the universe has a shape, it has a size. That means there's something else somewhere else, right? Or isn't there? Yeah. There's no explanation. We don't know.
It's one of those paradoxes, right? But I mean, but that's where apparent age comes from. When God created the universe, he created it already mature. So he already created it for the age that it needed to be for whatever his design was at the time.
So you're saying that like he created a 13.6999999 billion year old Earth? I mean, universe?
Yes. Through all things were created by him for his pleasure. Yes. He didn't just create the earth. He created the heavens and the earth to magnify his glory. That's straight out of the Bible.
Okay. So the problem here, though, is that we know, for example, the settled civilization sprung up in Mesopotamia in the Fertile Crescent about 20,000 years ago, probably. Every day, as you and I have grown up, it's always been pushed back, right? We were told it was 8,000, 10,000, 12,000. Now they're saying 20, maybe 22. Anyway, the point is, that's significantly longer than the date since creation calculated by biblical scholars. So, human beings have been. We have somewhat recorded history going back to that period, right? I mean, there's stone tablets that have human writing on them that are over 7,000 years old.
Yeah, cuneiform. The way that they get dated, though, is through carbon dating, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Usually, not exclusively, but yeah.
So let me kind of unpack two different things first. One about the age of the earth and how carbon comes and dinosaurs and stuff like that. Christians don't like to talk about this a whole lot, but they really should, because it is a major part of biblical doctrine, which is the Great Flood. God got so mad at humans. And pop quiz for you.
There's that meme side of him.
Yep, because you grew up Catholic. What was it exactly, Ted, that humans are doing that made God so angry? He repented of making man. What were we doing?
Oh, God. You know, I have to admit, I don't remember.
It was the violence we were committing each other, just the one killing of each other. And so what?
For another one.
And so what God did, of course, now that's where the story of Noah and his sons comes from, when the Great Flood happened. And this is one of the things I talked to about my pastors.
By the way, why would he be so pissed off? He made us the way we are, right? With a proclivity towards random violence, Cain and Abel, senseless violence. Mm-hmm. He made us this way. It's our nature.
He gave us the choice. That's the thing, right? I mean, we have the choice.
Well, our nature includes the choice, though, right?
I mean,
My cat doesn't have the choice to moo. He can't. It's not his nature.
But you can choose to be a neocon or to be a communist. Or you could choose to be a neocon communist or to be like John Bolton's protege. But you've chosen against those things.
True.
Just like I have.
Okay.
But the
nature to be violent or non, to have the choice between violence or nonviolence, right?
Yeah, well. Because originally, you got to remember that all happened after. It all happened because of the fall of mankind. When she ate of that fruit, that's not when the curse started. The curse started when Adam ate, because God did not tell he did not tell Eve, don't eat this. He told Adam, don't eat this. That's why Jesus had to be born of a virgin, because the sin is passed down by men. That's us. So that's where it comes from. But
let me just pick up my thread though, Robbie. So God gives us the ability to be violent. It makes it an option, right? Option B, be violent. Yep. And then we get violent and we start killing each other for mm-hmm. you know, wantonly. Why is God so pissed? He gave us the choice. He gave us the nature. He gave us that option. Mm-hmm. So what's the problem?
Because we are killing people who are made in his image. Every life is sacred.
But he knew we would do that, that we might do that. Well, in fact, he knew that we would do that because you said before he gives us, he knows what we're going to choose before we choose it.
Correct. And so what he did is like, no, I'm done with y'all. That's when he sent the flood, and this is where the carbon.
But the way it's written, it sounds like he's just, you know, it's like a bad decision. Like, oh man, I wish I hadn't created those assholes. So fuck them. Starting from scratch, do over. I mean,
because that's what he did. He was so disgusted with human beings. And again, I got into this with my pastors. Y'all need to realize this. So when God sent that flood, he killed everyone on the earth except for Noah and his family. Baby sucking at the breast, kids, men, women. He drowned everyone. Because you got to remember, before the flood happened, it never rained on the earth. The earth was watered every...
Human nature, because he still had Noah and his family. Yeah. They still had the same exact nature because they were from the same species.
Yeah, they did. But Noah was a righteous man. And so that was the difference, though, is that Noah believed him. Noah's like, I want to live according to your law. And that's where the whole concept of natural law comes from. It's like, you know, where... Like, for example, where does our liberty come from?
But it's like if you and I both have cats, if our cat catches a mouse and drags it in and half dead and spreads its entrails on our floor, you don't really have a right to be mad. It's a cat.
But the cat's not sentient. Doesn't have a soul.
Well, the cat's definitely sentient.
Okay, so define sentient in your your term.
Well, I mean, it has feelings, it has emotions, it has consciousness. I mean,
but it's not a living soul, like it's not aware.
If you believe in soul, well, we don't know about that. We don't really know. I think there's a strong, I think it probably does have a soul. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Bible says that they don't. So I'm going to go with what the Bible says.
Okay.
Humans have a soul.
That's what the debate is. We'll just like leave that. Right. But
the one of the ways that I like to define the sentient, and I could be totally wrong on this. I'm not an educated man.
It's like if you poke it and it moves, it's sentient. You know what I mean?
Well, that just means it's alive and responding to stimuli.
I'm gonna look that up, but I think that's what sentience means.
Sentient means that you're aware, that you're able to form complex thoughts and that kind of thing, and you're able to socialize, and that you're aware of the world in which you live, and you're able to directly impact it.
Means the basic feeling of being able to feel things like warmth, pain, joy, fear, etc., pleasure, suffering. That's it.
So then, what would the word be for what I'm describing?
A worm is sentient.
What would be the word then that you would use for what I'm talking? Just a higher level of sentience, just awareness.
I just want to make sure
that our definitions.
Consciousness would be a better, would be closer to it. Self consciousness, like you're aware, like the question is, does a cat know I'm a cat and I like to do this and that and I'm going to die? I don't know.
Okay, yeah, let's go with self awareness.
Get up in the morning and do his thing.
Because one of the things that I'm not Orthodox, I'm not a Catholic, but I like to read a lot of their philosophies and stuff. For me, it really intrigues me. And one of the things that John Locke wrote, keep in mind he wasn't one of those things, but he was definitely influenced by Saint Aquinas. was talk about the concept of law. Like, where does the whole idea of law come from? You know, from the human context,
right? Is it inherent?
And so that's where the whole idea of natural law comes from. Because, you know, that comes right out of the Bible. So the Bible says, you know, where there is no
natural, right? Like, all cultures have a prohibition against murder, for example.
No, some of them, like, you know, New Guinea, have no problem killing people and eating them. Or
I think that's. I mean, I guess I wonder. I mean, there might be. I don't know. Is there? But even in some tribal society in Papua New Guinea, it's probably still under some circumstances, like it's not okay to just randomly kill your fellow villagers and stuff.
No, what the Bible talks about is the age of accountability. So once you get old enough and you're able to start to reason, you're able to start to understand, is that God puts His law on your heart.
Like, it's reason, yeah.
Yeah, it's wrong for me to go out and rape somebody, or it's wrong for me to go out and murder somebody. So even if there's no law codified, you still have some kind of law.
Where in a state of mind matters. That's our law supposedly says that.
Yeah, I mean, Hammurabi's code is probably the oldest, at least the oldest code of law that I know of.
That is known.
And that's, and I mean, and no, natural law definitely influences that. If you read Confucius, or not Confucius, if you read Sun Tzu, his Art of War, actually talks about the laws of nature and of nature's gods. Mm-hmm. And this is a Chinese general from 2,400 years ago. So, I mean, there's clearly an idea that transcends geography, nations, and cultures. And I submit to you that that's nature, that that's the law of nature and nature's God. And whenever you ask me, why did God flood the earth when all these people were just going completely ham, you know, just with all the violence, just, and that'd be a lot of violence for God just to say, okay, I'm done with all of you. Is because Noah and his sons adhered to natural law. They adhered to those principles. And that's why God hit the reset button. Now,
okay, but still, you're not really answering my question, at least not to my satisfaction. Maybe everyone who's watching thinks that you are. But I mean, why was God even mildly perturbed that we were killing each other?
I answered that question.
Considering that I know why he was pissed, but you don't have, if you create, he created us. He's an omnipotent mm-hmm. being. He created us. He knew what we were going to do. I mean, let's put it that way. If you know what's going to happen, like if I know, like in 10 minutes, my cat's going to drag in a, you know, a mouse, I'm gonna go grab some paper towels and wait there to clean it up. I'm not gonna be like, "Fuck you, cat." So, like, why was he knew it was gonna happen? So why did he feel like he had to wash humanity away with the Great Flood? And also, that's part two questions. Why do that? And then why not, while you have the Great Flood, say, you know what? We're not gonna let any of these guys survive. If I want another, like, super smart biped, I'll just make another one.
Yeah, he could have, but thankfully our God is a merciful God, and he's more merciful than what we are.
Not,
so,
99.99% not that merciful, since they all got wiped away except for one family.
Yeah, but hey, he kept that family alive. He didn't have to. But not I mean, no, but at the end of the day, though, to answer your question, why did this happen is because if you believe in natural law, then people knew that they were doing wrong whenever they were going through and they're killing people. And whenever Abel was killed by Cain, when God asked Cain, said, "What have you done?" He said, I can hear the blood of Abel crying for justice. That's why God did it, is because all these innocent people are just getting whacked. Their blood was calling out for vengeance. And by the way, that's going to happen again in the future during the tribulation, because the Bible talks about how the saints are going to be getting killed. And when they get killed, we're going to be killed by beheading. In Revelation chapter 6, it talks about how the souls of those who are martyred for Christ are going to cry out, are going to cry out to God. So how long, O Lord, holy and true, will we have to wait till you take vengeance? And you can't sin in heaven. So if our souls are be crying out for vengeance in heaven, imagine what's happening with the souls that were happening before the flood, who had been wrongly killed, because that has to be paid.
But Robbie, you just sort of stumbled across something that that we mentioned earlier that seems to run counter. You say there's no difference between old and New Testament God, right?
Correct.
Crying out for vengeance, right?
Correct.
And I think Revelations is the only book that really in the New Testament is really does vengeance, right? In any kind of meaningful way. And it's an outlier, like in terms of its tone. And
it's the most violent book in the Bible.
It's totally like, I mean, it's cool as shit, but it also is like, what shrooms were you eating, dude? But the difference between, but okay, so why would, like, Jesus says, judge not lest ye be judged. That's not a statement calling for vengeance, is it?
Well, you got to think about this because, like, for example, whenever Jesus says, no, pray for your enemies. And if your enemy hits you, turn the other cheek. He never says anything about against the enemies of God. It's talking about your personal enemies. Matter of fact, the Bible says
silent on that point.
No, it's not. It's really not, because even in the Gospels, whenever Jesus is being taken, specifically in the Gospel of John, and I think it's also in Luke too. I have to double check. I know for a fact it's in John. When he's taking the cross and he's going up to Golgotha, and all the women are on the side of the road and they're wailing, Jesus looks at him and says, "Don't weep for me, weep for yourselves, because the days of vengeance are coming." And that vengeance came 30 years later with Titus. So don't think that God of the Old Testament and God of the New are different. They are one and the same.
Well, there's also kind of slightly different Jesuses in each of the books of the doxology, don't you think? I mean, tonally, some of the stories have some conflicts. And the tone is different, right? Just sort of like,
well, they were written by different people.
Feel of Jesus as a character. I mean, you mentioned that it's poetry. The Bible is literature too, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's studied at Columbia in the the classic literary humanities class that every Columbia student has to take. Great class. It's like one of the things is, so in literature, a character has a certain tone, right? I mean, Huck Finn is the same throughout Mark Twain's book. Jesus is not really the same throughout.
Well, you got to remember, Jesus was God come in human form as a flesh. He was a man, and the disciples, the four disciples who wrote the Gospels, they wrote based on what their perceptions were of what they saw and what really stuck with them and what resonated. So, like, for example, when your time when you were in Kazakhstan, if you, me, John, and five or six other people were there. And we were there just touring the country for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then we all wrote books. Would our books be identical, or would we write down the things that really stuck out to us in our minds?
Obviously, they'd be different. And
how it is with Jesus. And so that's why, it's because, I mean.
But if it's divinely inspired, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, shouldn't there be some stylistic consistency? I mean, we talked about this the other day, and I really want to get back to it because. Yeah. What does divinely inspired mean exactly? Like, in other words, does it mean, I mean, I could see a huge range between, like, somewhere in the back of the writer's head, there's this little God's, like, subtly infusing thoughts into this person's mind. And like, it comes out, it manifests in some subtle way, all the way to the person's overcome completely in a trance and is literally just a transcription machine, like a typewriter, being, everything in between, right?
That's the question I honestly can't answer, because I've never wrote one of the Gospels. I wasn't one of the writers. I don't know. So I don't know if God just inspired them to write what they were doing, or if he kind of, I don't know how it happened. I just know that it did. And for me, that's enough.
So for a non-believer, I think, I know that, like, the vagueness, and look, not everything in the world has to be known, right? Like,
sure.
When they first started coding DNA and decoding the genome, there was this whole idea of junk DNA. You probably remember that, where it was like, oh, there's all this stuff and it probably doesn't do anything. and it's probably just like from it's leftovers from evolution. But yeah. Now we know there's no such thing like that. That's just bullshit. That wasn't true. We just didn't know. And so, you know, it's just like the Americas were here, you know, even if Europeans didn't know before 1492.
Sure.
So we just don't know. And so I don't want to say that like something's not true just because it's not precise and it doesn't claim to know everything. But
I mean, there's a lot in the Bible that I do not understand.
Christianity has all religions are so vague that it's what's frustrating to someone who's like not who's open-minded is it's like, come on, you've written your way out of all these contradictions.
Hasn't evolution done the same thing? Like, for example, let's just say that evolution was a thing if that actually happened, right? And you had this little organism that was somehow created, despite the fact that natural law says that no, you cannot.
There's good evidence for it, though, like the you know the bottom of Lake Baikal.
Yeah, but let me just kind of just make this point real quick. So you form. Let's just say you're a salamander or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And you come crawling out of the ooze.
The primordial soup. Yeah.
So two questions. One, what are you going to eat? And second, how are you going to mate? Because unless the thing you're biologically compatible with is like right there. If she's 50 miles away from where you are, you're screwed.
True.
Because there's nothing else there. Those are two problems that evolution can't answer. So, I mean, so there's vagueness on both sides.
Well, so the thing about evolution, though, is evolution doesn't claim to know the entire story, right? Evolution just claims to say that there's a process that happens by fits and starts that goes a certain way, but that the details are not known, right? And or that they're constantly being learned about. We know some, like we know there's missing links. We know that there's some animals that we thought were, you know, pandas. We thought they weren't bears. Now we think they're bears. You know, just like things like that. I mean, so the original theory is that we had amino acids floating in great heat.
Where do they come from?
Well, I guess you could say God created them. But anyway, the point is the Big Bang, right? And that's the part that nobody – to me, the Big Bang is the argument for religion. Yep. The Big Bang is because it's like there is – like science
there's and nothing there.
Religion are in complete agreement on this point. At the beginning, 13.7 billion or 6,800 years ago, I don't think that timeline's that important really. But like you start at nothing and then suddenly everything explodes and you get a lot. And where does that all, how is it possible for something to come from nothing is the question, the ultimate magic trick.
Yeah. And one of the questions that I'm just if I can think of a way to phrase this the right way, that sound like a total retard because I'm good at sound like a retard.
Unless you believe in the oscillating universe, but that still doesn't answer the question because at some point there had to be a first Big Bang.
Well, no, I've had people ask me, well, where did God come from? Because in our universe, you got to have matter, you got to have space, you got to have time, right? Those are the three things that you've got to have. Well, for God, you got to have a place of when did he create it? Where did he get the matter from? And then the space is where did he put it when he made it? The way that Christianity talks about this.
13.699999 billion year old.
And so the way that Christianity answers this is that God exists outside of space and time. Like he is outside of where we are.
So why doesn't fundamentalist Christianity avail itself of that argument to say, listen, the 6,800 years, maybe yes, maybe no, but that's, you know, God's outside of space and time.
Yeah. I'm like, can I prove what I'm about to say? Absolutely not. How you talk about how the universe has a border. I believe that God exists on the outside of that border. Can I prove it? No, Absolutely not. But that makes sense because you got to be outside of the bubble that we're currently in. Can I prove that? No, not in any way, shape, or form. But that's what I think. But is that doctrine? Is that dogmatic? I can't make that argument. I have no idea. But my personal belief is that he exists outside of our universe and that he's looking in.
All right. So let's just stipulate that. So if that's the case, and that would make sense to me, then why stick to the whole, like, the Bible is literally true down to Moses being 1,000 years old and all that? Why can't we just say, look, these people, you know, the departments of weights and measures didn't, wasn't like what it is today. The people who wrote this, the books have been translated from one language to another, to another, to another. Some stuff's got lost in translation, and that's okay.
Except it hasn't. And again, it all kind of goes back to faith, because we were talking about Noah the other day, about the 66 books of the canon Bible that I read as a Baptist. And we were talking about how I read the King James Bible because it's translated from the received text, the Textus Receptus. Where did that come from? That came from the Byzantine texts. So you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of copies of copies of copies that align perfectly with each other. Regardless of the language, regardless of the geography, regardless of the time, we don't have the originals, but we don't need them because we have the copies of the copies of the copies. That's why, that's one of the reasons why.
It's still translated, right? The thing is, Robbie, so let's say you have the, I'll stipulate to all that, mm-hmm. but Bibles are translated into every language on the planet.
Oh, right? For sure. Yeah, and no language.
They're translated by people. Are you saying that every time, Bob's publishing company in Moldova calls up, has their translator and says, you'll translate Bible into Moldovan, and they get Igor to write it, that Igor's translation is also divinely inspired?
Do you, so when the King James Bible was written, I'm about to throw a curveball at you.
Just add something, you would freak out, but I used to work with this gay guy at Columbia. He was literally working on a gay porn version of the Bible.
I believe it.
Verse by verse. I can't imagine that anyone would say that that was divinely inspired.
No, that was satanic. And Romans chapter 1 actually addresses that. People who want to hate God, God will give them over to a reprobate mind. See, God gives us the choice.
Okay, but there's a place between being satanic and there's a place and being divinely inspired. Mm-hmm. People who are just, being people and translating. They're like, if I got a job translating the Bible into French.
Sure.
My French isn't really that great to do that, but let's just say it was, and I did that. I would do as good a job as I possibly could, but I would take it very seriously, but would you say that my translation, because I'm translating a divinely inspired text mm-hmm. into another language, would you say that inherently that the version that the French readers would buy translated by Ted Rall would be divinely inspired also?
No, because you'd be working with a team of other people. So for example, with the King James Bible, when it was translated from Aramaic, Hebrew, and Greek into English, do you know how many translators that King James had hired to get that done?
No idea.
Over 80. And it took them over 4 years to do it. And you had them broke up into different teams and had the best scholars of the day. And so that's the point that I'm trying to make here is, and again, a lot of this is going to go back to faith again, because the Bible is clear that one of the promises that God makes is that his words will never pass away. They'll never perish. And that we will have them for all time. He said, heaven and earth will pass away. My words will never pass away. Matter of fact, that was so reinforced that in the Gospel of John, the very first chapter, where he says, in the beginning was the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And then the Word became flesh and came to earth. The Word is Jesus, and all things through him were created. He is the Word.
Well, but the thing is that there were a lot of politics involved in the commission of the King James Bible, right? Certain books were cut completely. And then references that were critical of monarchy were also like, you know, excised. I mean, it's not just trying to be true to Christian text.
Well, you're talking about the Council of Nicaea. And so what they were doing then is that they're going through, like, for example, the Book of Enoch and stuff that were just really just far out, just a lot of mess. And that's one of the reasons why they took it very seriously. Now, back then, people were very serious about the religion, kind of like what they are, kind of like what the Islamic world is now. Now, mm-hmm. Here in the West now, the Christianity is like, oh, yeah, sure, our culture, I'm a Christian, but I don't really believe any of it. No, it is what it is.
Right, right.
Back then, religion was very, very serious.
Absolutely.
And so whenever you say that there were politics involved, it was to weed out the paganism from the actual word of God, because you got to remember, Justin the Apostate had just been killed, conveniently enough, fighting the Iranians just a few years before in Persia. So, I mean, this all happened in living memory of the division of the Roman Empire, because Justin was the last emperor that ruled East and West. And so after that happened, when Constantinople was established, that's when the church came up with the idea, we need to have a canon Bible. And so they had all of the scholars from all over the empire, Africa, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, no, all over the place. And that's what they did, is you had the greatest minds that were able to go through and then were able to select the books that were canon and the ones that are obvious were forgeries. And so that's where this comes from. It's not like, no, the Catholic Bible, they have the Apocrypha in there. They have a lot of these books, but they're not scripture, but they are historical. Like, Maccabees, because that's in the Catholic Bible. That's a history lesson. There's nothing divine about it. It just has to do with the story of Antiochus Seleucus being thrown out of Jerusalem and the temple being rededicated.
Robbie, we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to pick this up. Obviously, we're not going to resolve this here. I didn't think we would, but.
I think it was respectful. And I do hope that the people who are watching were able to, whether you agree or disagree, were able to at least agree that it was a fun discussion. I hope that y'all found it entertaining.
It was super fun for me anyway.
I enjoyed it. I'm not watching the comments at all. I'm just talking to you.
Yeah, no, I'm not looking at the comments either. In the future, by the way, when we do this, we'll do this next week, I guess. We'll take your comments. So maybe for that we could do an aha thing. That
would be a good idea. Yeah, because it's one of the things you want to do is that we want to get Ted into the Rumble Creator Program, and so we're going to be doing this and just trying to grow his follower, his stuff, and who knows, maybe we can have like a real actual policy debate one day and not just religion.
Yeah, no, because we can do whatever we want. Yeah. It's the best thing in the world. Thanks everyone for watching us here. This is the first ever Ted Rall official Rumble page thing with Robbie and I. It was fun. Hope you enjoyed it. And please stay tuned. Don't stay tuned.
There's nothing to stay tuned for.
Nothing to stay tuned. But Deprogram with myself and John Kiriakou is Monday through Friday. That's 9 a.m. Eastern time, both on YouTube and on Rumble, followed by 10 o'clock Eastern time, TMI show with myself and Manila Chan. On Thursdays, Scott Stantis and I do an interview with other cartoonists often on DMZ America podcast. Today's interview was with Nick Kausar, exiled Iranian cartoonist. Super interesting. Some people were mad at me for putting him on, but I'd put him back on anytime. Anyway, thanks everyone. Bye, Robbie. Talk to you soon.
Bye, buddy.